I'm Gabe Ortiz, afternoon host at WIPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make the live streams like this one more difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WIPR's future. Find out more and donate at WIPR.org. Thank you.
And welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up on the show tomorrow, Baltimore City Councilman Ryan Dorsey previews a package of housing bills that he hopes will improve affordability and availability of housing in our city. Plus, Earl Arnett talks about his new book on the love of his life, his wife, jazz legend Ethel Ennis. And J. Wynn Russick reviews the new play at Baltimore Center Stage, John Wilkes Booth, One Night Only. So that's all coming up tomorrow on Midday. And now we're going to turn the page to our summer reading lists. Whether you're looking for a fluffy beach read, a hard-hitting political thriller, or an in-depth historical study, our next guests have you covered. Julia Flyshaker is the owner of Greedy Reads Bookstores with locations in Remington and Fells Point, and Emma Snyder is the owner of the Ivy Bookshop in North Baltimore, as well as Bird in Hand in Charles Village. They read a lot of books, and they join me here in Studio B to talk about what titles that you may want to have on your summer reading list, and we would love to hear from you. What are you reading this summer? What are you looking forward to trying out this summer? Give us a call, 410-662-8780, or send us an email, midday@wipr.org. Emma, it's great to see you. Welcome.
Wonderful to see you, Tom. Thank you.
Julia, always great to see you as well.
Thank you so much for having me.
So thanks for coming in, both of you. And it's interesting, we asked you to send us a list of some things that you might want to talk about, and you didn't confer with each other.
I didn't know it was allowed.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
It's an isolation.
That's right. You might have been arrested had you done that, you know, for a breach of etiquette. But there's one book that's on both of your lists, which is interesting. It's a book called Audition by Katie Kitamura. So we'll give you the first stab at it. What's it about?
It is about a actress in New York. And it's really a conceptual novel, so I think it also speaks to a shared sensibility probably between me and Julia. But she is living in New York. She has a husband, and it's about kind of the nature of relationships. It's about the nature of performance. It's about kind of how we tell the stories of our lives, maybe, which makes it sound like it doesn't have a plot at all. Which, Julia, you want to take it from there?
It's kind of a dual narrative. So it's the book is split into two parts, and the roles are different. The characters have different roles. So there's one character, you don't know if it's the main character's son, maybe it's her lover, maybe it's both. I don't know. And it's not plot driven, but she does have a way of writing that makes it feel like a thriller almost. It's really like propulsive. It carries you along because you want to know.
She is a wonderfully crisp writer, I think. Like, there is just attentiveness to language. There's tightness to the sentences, and that creates its own tension, I think. But exactly, there's just this air of mystery.
Yeah, because if there are actual characters that you can't place, you can't identify that.
And certainly, I think that's her project, is to make us all think about, like, what is it that we're doing every day when we're eating our pastries in the morning, when we're sort of interacting even with the people we're closest to in given moments. It sounds strange to say, but are they our son, or are they our lover, or are they someone we've never met? Like, you know,
and the roles that we think we're playing versus the roles that other people are perceiving us as playing.
So Audition by Katie Kitamura. It's interesting. Yeah, I'm reminded of when I first started reading the Hilary Mantel books, you know, about, you know, Henry VIII and all of it. And there's a gazillion characters in there. And they give you org charts in the beginning of the book. Hilary Mantel gives you this thing. And for the first book or two, I started, you know, referring to the org chart all the time, the family trees, to say, who is that person? Because there's just so many people. And then finally I said, you know, I don't need to know. I can get through, because it's so exciting finding out what happens. And if I can't specifically identify how these people are related to each other, it's not going to matter all that much. So I just stopped doing that, and it was much more enjoyable to finish the book,
that
which I adored.
Definitely a key, I think, for a lot of books is realizing you don't have to. No one's going to quiz you on it afterwards, and you don't have to memorize everything.
And that when you're right, exactly. And when you're feeling that sense of like, I'm having trouble, it is this kind of like, oh, relax into the world of the book and relax into the project of the author. And I feel that way. Also, now that we've brought it up, Wolf Hall by Hilary Mantel would be a great summer read.
Yeah.
Truly, that is one of the most remarkable books
I've read. I love that.
It's an incredible book.
Yeah. It's not a brand new book by any means, but it's terrific.
But if you haven't read it.
Is there, I mean, Julia, for you, is there such a thing as a summer read? I mean, do you read things that are different? I mean, people talk about beach reads. They want to have, you know, stuff that's not literarily
good.
I never do that.
I'm a mood reader more. Sometimes I want, like, a plot that's, you know, a linear narrative that's going to, sometimes I want something like Audition, which is more, I don't know, vague. but, no, it doesn't really go by seasons. I would say the only thing, I'm one of those kind of nerdy people that if I'm going on vacation somewhere, I will try to read in advance about the place or authors from that place.
Oh,
so
uh-huh.
that's the one thing.
To
that
geographically locate
yes.
yourself. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at the Ivy, Emma, do people come in saying, I need a beach read? In other words, I need a dumb book, you know, that's not going to stress me too much?
Well, I think people do come in saying, I need a beach read. And the follow-up question is, what does that mean to you? Like, what's something that you've read at the beach before that was a really satisfying experience for you? Because for some people, that means, like, great narrative history. For some people, that means just a totally shocky book that's going to turn their brains off. For other people, that means Audition. Like, oh, yeah. I want a book. And that's one of the things I think is great about that is it's slim. You can read it sort of, you can linger in it or you can read it quickly. Like, but it's something that I feel like you can have, a submerged kind of visceral experience in it. And for me, that's an ideal summer read in many ways.
Yeah. 410-662-8780. We'd love to hear what you're reading this summer or anytime. Our email midday@wipr.org. So, Julia, another book on your list is called Perfection by Vincenzo Latranico.
So we're going low on plot with my choices so far this year, today. But I loved Perfection, and it's another really slim book. It's kind of the satire of these two expats living in Berlin, and it starts with this rundown of everything in their environment, the plants and the subway tiles, and kind of this like perfectly curated existence that they have, and then it turns into this pretty brutal takedown of the flattened culture that we have all either created or exist in now.
But it's a writerly book rather than a plot-driven book.
It is not plot-driven. It is not plot-driven at all. Though I will say that by the end of the book, I was like, are these people the villains of the century? It's possible that they are. But, you know, there's also that take a little bit longer and think maybe we hate them because we all have a little bit of them inside of us. But it's another not plot driven. However, it's a quick read and I haven't stopped talking about it. So that to me is part of what's fun about
a vacation
or a summer read or whatever is being able to talk about it afterwards.
Yeah. Well, Emma, you and I over the years have talked about how we are drawn to, and Julia too, to a certain extent, to the writerly writers. Mm-hmm. I mean, the one, you know, because there are certain books I don't want to finish. Because they're so good.
Yeah.
So I like limit myself. I'm only going to read 40 pages tonight and that's it. And I'm going to make sure I don't finish this because the experience of the prose and the beauty of it and the genius of it.
Yeah.
Liz Stroud is an author like that. I mean, her latest novel, she was on in the fall to talk about, I guess it's called Everything Everywhere or something like that. I can't remember. But it's all of these characters from her previous books.
Oh, I love
it. Which I have.
And weaving together.
And
they
all
so
sort of
satisfying.
Meet and they talk. Mm-hmm. And so, but just the writing is so beautiful and expert. I wanted to just stick with it. You know, and I didn't want it to end.
Which is like a different but equally valuable experience, I guess. It's like, it's just opposite of like reading a book that you're like, I can't wait to finish to find out what happens.
Yeah.
And that kind of like opposite.
It was called Tell Me Everything.
Tell Me Everything.
And it was a wonderful, it was such a reward for people who had read all of her other novels, which was, as a bookseller, a delightful thing to get to tell people when they came in. And very occasionally there'd be people who'd said, oh, I didn't like X. And it's like, well, this is probably not the novel for you. But
of course, you didn't have to have read all of
them. You did not have to have read it. It was a very satisfying novel on its own. Yeah. And it was also, that book, again, it would be a great summer read. But it I think the way in which it was also reflective, it was reflective in the way that she must be reflective about having created these worlds of characters. But it's like the reward at the end of the day is you just get to sink into the book and then you get to spend as much time with it as sort of.
Let's go to the phones. Angela's on the line. Angela, welcome to the show. What are you reading these days?
Hi, Tom. I'm actually in the middle of Octavia Butler's Wild Seed, and it's a book that I actually have had for a while but never got around to reading. I've read quite a few of her books, and I love her writing. This book pulls me in, but I'm also revolted. Like, I'm repelled. I want to tell the antagonist to run. I just, it's very, I feel so conflicted. So, but it's a great read, but I've never felt this kind of, this conflict that I'm having right now.
That's interesting, but that's a great credit to the great writer, Octavia Butler. I mean, you know, that you can have those you know, multi-dimensional aspects of the book. Well, that's a great suggestion, Angela. Thank you. That's Wild Seed by the great Octavia Butler. So, Emmy, you have one on your list called The Living and the Rest by José Eduardo Agualusa.
Yes. He's an Angolan writer. And one of the reasons that I picked this up is also that it's produced by Archipelago, which is a small press that does beautiful work in translation, and just highly recommend anyone who hasn't investigated Archipelago and what they're doing. They tend to be sort of small books that are sort of beautifully, sort of physically beautiful. So I think that's a lovely thing to stick in your bag on a summer trip. So it's translated from the Portuguese, and it's about this group of writers from across Africa as they head to Mozambique for a literary festival, and then there's an incredible storm, and so they're cut off together on this little island. And it weaves together sort of their thoughts, their interactions, but also their characters kind of start to emerge and interact with them. And it, again, it almost feels like it's in conversation with Audition of like, how do we perform in the world? How do we create the world together? And it also is a book that has a real element of optimism, I think, and a sense of kind of hopefulness about our ability to create things in concert with one another that feels like a balm right now.
Yeah, great. So, and we, really, of course, are going to list all of the books that we're talking about on the Midday webpage at WIPR.org. But that's The Living and the Rest, José Eduardo Agualusa. So, Julie, another one on your list is The Great Black Hope by Rob Franklin. Tell us about that one.
I loved this book. This is a debut novel, and just on a sentence level, the writing is, it's like just elegant and really assured, and just a very pleasant reading experience. It's a New York party novel. It's a mystery of a missing woman, a story of class and race and who gets a second chance in this country and who gets kind of buried under, you know, a single mistake. The writing, I mean, it reminded me a little bit of my experience last year reading Martyr, if anybody read that. On a sentence level, it's just really exquisite writing. And I'm excited to see what Rob Franklin does in the future.
Debut novel. It's interesting that you bring up Martyr. Kaveh Akbar is the author of that. Linnell wrote, my wife read that in her book club and just raved.
Such a great book. The whole book club
just thought it was amazing. So that's number one on my list.
That's a great one.
For when I take a vacation.
That's a good summary.
That is.
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
Because I'm really looking forward to it. But she reads a lot and she's pretty picky, you know. And so when she raves about something, I take that pretty seriously. Debut novels are a real leap of faith. I mean, I get a lot of them sent to me here at WIPR asking me to interview the authors. And It's tough. I mean, there are certain authors, you know, if Elizabeth Stout writes a book, I'm going to read it. If Ann Patchett writes a book, I'm going to read it. If, you know, James McBride writes a book, I'm going to read it. I don't need to read reviews. I don't need any of that. You know, there's certain people, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. I just read her most recent book, and she was on the show, called Dream Count, which I loved. I just thought it was a fantastic novel. But boy, the first timers, you got to... I don't know. Do you use any particular metric, Emma, with first-timers, debut novels?
Well, there's actually a debut novel that comes out next month called Among Friends by Hal Ebbett that is one of my recommendations as well. And I picked that up because of one of the blurbs by a writer I really love on the jacket. And I think that with a debut novel can be a really good way to figure out whether or not the novel is going to live up. And in that instance, the thing I was stunned by was just the language, the control he had over language, over sentence, over structure, over all the elements, but also the level of perceptiveness was just extraordinary. So it's a bit of a dark book, and it's definitely sort of austere. I wouldn't say it's like an emotionally, it doesn't wrap you in a warm hug, but if you want to read something that's quite unsettling and really masterful, but I think part of it is you always are taking a chance, but when you hit it right, you get to read that person for their entire career. And I think that is just thrilling to get to start picking up and noticing when their new books come out.
Yeah. I mean, like Alice McDermott writes a book every 6 or 7 years. So you got long waits in between.
Man.
But they're always worth it.
But when, they come out.
You know, Ann Tyler, God bless her, she's got a new novel out. And she writes one about every 2 years. I mean, she's in her 80s now, and she's still publishing books, which is great. But you don't have to wait quite as long with Ann, and that's nice. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more. And listeners, we'd love to hear again from you about what you're reading. 410-662-8780 or email midday@wypr.org. When we come back, we're going to talk to Blima about what Blima's reading this summer. And again, we'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780. Julia Fleischecker is the owner of Greedy Reads. Emma Snyder, the owner of the Ivy Bookshop and Bird in Hand. So what are you looking forward to reading this summer? You got to let us know. We'll talk to you on the other side of a quick break. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.
And welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. In 1988, in his inaugural address, Mayor Kurt Schmoke announced a new motto for the city of Baltimore: the city that reads. Remember that? It was on all the park benches and stuff. Baltimore has a long literary history and a rich array of local bookstores and booksellers. If you've just joined us, we're discussing the best books to read this summer with two women behind two of our best bookstores. Emma Snyder is the owner of the Ivy Bookshop and the Bird in Hand Coffee and Bookstore in Charles Village. Julia Fleischecker is the owner of Greedy Reads. They've got locations in Remington and down in Fells Point. They're with me here in Studio B. We would love to hear from you as well. 410-662-8780. Our email midday@wypr.org. Let's go to the phones to Owings Mills, where Blima is on the line. Welcome to the show. What's on your reading list this summer?
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I just finished reading a book, nonfiction. It's called The Wager. It's by David Grant, A-N-N, and it takes place in 1740. Flotilla from England, it's riding the Atlantic Ocean all the way to the Strait of the Magellan, and then Patagonia, and trying to go over to the Pacific side, looking for a Spanish ship with a lot of riches. It's captivating. It's written. I love it. You feel like one of the character that battling mutiny and murder and huge waves and the ocean. I thought it was fabulous.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for that suggestion, Blima. I appreciate it. And you guys have some nonfiction titles on your list. Emma, you have a book by Robert McFarlane called Is a River Alive. What's that one about?
So Robert McFarlane is completely brilliant. He's this singular kind of synthesizer of so many things. He's a naturalist, geographer, literary historian, memoirist, historian, and adventurer. And so this particular book, it's I think his fifth or sixth book, and he generally writes about, he's written a book about kind of the history of walking and walking paths in England. He's written about Underland, which where he went under
one of
the
my
earth.
Favorite books.
It's incredible. Wonderful book called Wild Places, where he went out to really remote locations that are still kind of untouched. So Is a River Alive is in that sort of, is in that lineage, and it's about rivers. And specifically, it's this idea that, as he writes, rivers are living creatures in a living world. And then he tells the story of three rivers, both in their own rights and then the ways that we humans interact with them. It's just beautiful, and the way that he sort of integrates his own experiences with the rivers, but the ways that they live and move and change and adapt and also sort of allow for, to carry history through, is just as utterly moving. If anyone hasn't read, he is just a singular voice, I think.
Yeah. So highly recommend. Right. Is a River Alive by Robert McFarlane. We have The Wager by David Grant, recommended by our caller, Blima. I'm going to recommend Rick Atkinson's latest book,
yeah,
which is about the Revolutionary War. It's the second of three books on the Revolutionary War, called The Fate of the Day. I interviewed Rick at the Pratt Library for an event that we did there. This is a beautifully written, unbelievably researched, granular look at like every day. It's like what Washington had for breakfast every morning before they went to battle. It's really something. He's going to actually be on this show. He's going to be on Midday in early July. We're going to talk about it then. But it's not just history. It's beautifully written history. And again, it's as the writerly impulse, it works. And Julia, you want to recommend somebody something by a nonfiction book by Jean Grey called In My Remaining Years. What's that one about?
Jean is a very funny, I guess you would say, multi-hyphenate comedian, musician, author. And, you know, you get a sense of the book just from the cover, which is Jean coming out of a coffin with a glass of wine in her hand. So it can be described as a midlife coming of age kind of. She's just got a great, funny, vulnerable when it should be voice. She is local. She lives here in Baltimore, which is always great. But just kind of a lot of the things that I find as a fellow middle ager, find myself thinking about. She really talks about in this book, and in a funnier way than I would think about them.
And she's right here in Baltimore.
And
we
right
have
here
so
in
many wonderful authors.
Incredible.
Yeah.
It really is really quite something. You have another nonfiction title, Emma, called Moral Ambition by Rutger Bregman.
Yes. So this is the third in his series of books. He had Utopia for Realists and Humankind. And it's got snappy writing. It's a little bit directive. I think of it almost as societal self-help. But he's essentially asking us to think about the ways in which it is a reasonable thing to ask to aspire to do meaningful work in the world, and that we need to kind of reframe the questions we ask ourselves to get there. It's got a carpe diem spirit, I would say. And it's really, I think, a great jumping off point for conversations about kind of how we find ourselves in this moment of history when a lot of people feel pretty dispirited about our ability to make change or just sort of galvanize around a hopeful vision of the future. And I think Bregman is saying that's up to us and we can do that. But what we have to do is start by asking ourselves really essential questions.
Yeah.
And this book helps do that.
That's a perfect adjective for this time, dispirited. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people really are they're despairing on a certain level. But the dispiritedness, has to do with so many things on the universal level, the national level, the international level, as well as the personal level, because so many of these other things are just weighing on us so much.
For me, actually, when you asked me to make this list or us to make these lists, Tom, I found it an interesting exercise because when I stepped back, not having done it intentionally, I realized that I think that's the theme that cuts through the books that I ended up recommending, whether they were fiction or nonfiction, was books that are trying to, are wrestling with or answering that question. And sometimes, like, it doesn't seem obvious that Is a River Alive and Moral Ambition are in conversation with one another, but they really are. And in part, it's, I think, that what McFarlane's doing is saying, like, he is gloriously, radiantly in love with the natural world. And what he is trying to say is, both, it is out there for you to fall in love with too, but also find the thing that moves you the way this moves me, and also that provides a kind of continuity with the past and the future, which rivers do. Mm-hmm. And his ability to both perceive that, but also then, I mean, his writing is like, ugh, it is so beautiful. And his, and the sort of the ways in which he creates his own art form out of this obsessive love with the natural world, to me, I read it and I sort of tear up, and then I think, like, oh, I've got my marching orders from my life. How do I do what Robert McFarlane has done? And I think that is what Rutger Bregman is suggesting we all try and do. But I think it's there in these novels. I absolutely think it's there in Audition, which both Julie and I loved. I think it is a moment in which I think those are questions most people I know are asking, and I think that's a wonderful moment to turn to books.
And Julia, you have one by Dean Spade, and it's a book I'll never interview the author about because I can't say the title on the radio. But it's Love in an Effed Up World. In a world, so obviously, you know, he's going for the jugular
you're
in the title.
Going for the jugular. Yeah.
What's
you know,
it about?
It's about how being a good friend and partner and in all of these relationships you have in your life can help strengthen the bonds, or we need them to strengthen the bonds to fight towards justice and collective liberation and all of these things that require cooperation, friendship, trust, and love.
Yeah, there's not enough conversation about the paucity and the absence of love in public policy, I think. You know?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, it reminded me a little...
It's not all about money.
It reminded me a little bit about the first time I read All About Love by Bell Hooks, and it kind of reorients your way of thinking about existing in the world, which is the greatest thing you can ask.
Yeah, to be reoriented about how you think. Exactly. Absolutely. That's the whole point of reading, whether you're at the beach or anywhere else.
Exactly.
So, Emma, you have a title by Sarah Levine called Treasure Island. It's not a brand new book by
any
means.
It is not.
But you discovered it.
And it is Treasure Island, !! Which I just, that's a reason to grab a book. It's like, what? There's something jaunty about this. It is a book. It is about maybe 15 years ago, and it's about a woman who's 25 and kind of idling in her life, and her sister like drops off a copy of Treasure Island for her to return to the library for her. Instead, she picks it up, reads it, and thinks, why am I not living my life the way that Jim Hawkins was living his life? Like, and comes up with, says, I'm going to now live my life with boldness, resolution, independence, horn blowing. And sort of you just get to go on this romp with her as she tries to thread the spirit of Treasure Island through her daily life. And it ends up being more reflective than you might expect, but it is also, I mean, it's the kind of book you just pick it up, you read it in a night, and you're like, wow, that was amazing. So highly recommend
Treasure Island by Sarah Levine. We're going to give Mary on the line from Baltimore, I guess, the last word. Mary, we're about to finish up. What's on your list?
My list the book is called Who is Government? It's by a man named Michael Lewis. And as a matter of fact, I bought two copies at the Ivy Bookstore about 3 weeks ago because it gives real life stories of some amazing people who work for the federal government. And I work for the federal government. And I figured with all the bashing and the bad mouthing we're getting, I needed to read some stories of optimism and hope.
That's a great suggestion, and that absolutely is on my list as well. I've been reading Michael Lewis since he wrote for the New Republic in the 70s and the 80s. I mean, he's just a brilliant writer, and he's assembled a bunch of writers to do profiles of people who work in departments you've never heard of, in some cases, for the government. So that's a great suggestion, Mary. Thank you so much, and God bless and good luck. As a federal employee, this is a very tenuous time for you and everybody else. Emma, thank you so much. Always good to see you. And great suggestions. Julia, terrific suggestions as well.
Thank
I am grateful
so
to both of you for coming by. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's always fun.
Emma Snyder. She's the owner of the Ivy Bookshop in North Baltimore and Bird in Hand in Charles Village. The Ivy has an event tonight with the beekeeper, Tara Chapman. Tomorrow night, Tyson Kashka presents his new book about the band Crack in the Sky. And coming up on June 17th, Laura Lippman will introduce her new novel, Murder Takes a Vacation. Julia Fleischecker owns Greedy Reads. They have a big, big festival, the Lost Weekend Literary Festival. It starts Friday night. That's it for us today. Thanks for being with us. I appreciate it. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great day.
This is 88.1 WIPR, Baltimore's NPR news station.